the co-founder and former CEO of Foursquare, joins us to talk about his new project, how to make the internet fun again, and his thoughts on the latest tech news from AI to mixed reality. You don't want to miss this one. All that and more coming up right after this.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
Welcome to Big Technology Podcast, a show for cool-headed, nuanced conversation with the tech world and beyond. We have a great show for you today. We have a legendary New York founder and also someone who's going to introduce a new product that he's working on, which is very exciting for us here today. I won't take up any more time in the intro. Dennis Crowley, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on the pod. Really excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Let's just kind of talk about the state of Foursquare, because I think the meme is that it was big for a number of years. It's like 15 years old at this point. Now it's two apps. There's Foursquare City Reviews, I think, and then there's the Swarm app where you can check in. And I think there's a view that it had its moment. Now it's kind of dormant. It's moved into ad tech, right? There's been some location services that Foursquare has provided, but I think it's kind of murky after that. So I checked the App Store today. Both those apps have updated within the past 3 months, so it's still active. But tell us a little bit about the Foursquare story arc and where we are today.
Yeah, I mean, we started Foursquare in 2009, and now it's 2024. So that's like, is that like 15 years? I mean, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I was CEO of the company for 6 years. I no longer work there. It's not my day job, but I remain on the board. And I'm an active participant in board discussions and strategy discussions, right? But I think that the story of the company often gets framed through the apps. Like, yeah, we still have these two apps. It's still in the store. There's still millions of people that use them, but like, it's obviously not what it was back in like 2012, 2013. But I mean, that's fine, right? Like, the company's business is not based around the consumer apps. The company's business is based around this idea of location technology, location intelligence, developer tools, business analytics. We were doing a lot of in the location advertising space, and as that space started to dismantle a bit, we've started to focus more on location analytics and location tools and technologies for third parties. And so, it's a good, stable, successful business. Company does well north of $100 million a year in revenue, 300 plus employees, maybe closing in at 400 employees, offices around the country. It's a good, stable, solid business. Just a lot different than the Foursquare that many people know from, call it 12, 15 years ago.
Yeah, I think that would surprise a lot of people. 100 million in revenue a year.
Well north of that. So, but yeah. I don't know what I'm, it's all going to stick.
Right. But that's very big. And it was also like, I was going on your LinkedIn and you kind of like give it a description of Foursquare. And you say back in 2009, Foursquare made the check-in mainstream. And today those 13 plus billion check-ins are the foundation of our powerful proprietary Pilgrim technology that helps make sense of where phones go for more than 150,000 partners, including Uber, Tencent, Apple, Samsung, and Twitter. So basically, from my understanding, is Foursquare knows where people are because they've been checking in, and you can sort of match like the Wi-Fi signal and the cell phone location. And so they've been like, there's been almost this human reinforcement, right? Of like where the technology thinks you are. And that's become a valuable service to these companies to figure out where people are.
Yeah, I think the original kind of big thing that we did was made this crowdsourced map of the world. Like the same way that Wikipedia is a crowdsourced encyclopedia, like we made maybe the original crowdsourced map of the world based upon people checking into places and adding photos and updating things, and a whole community of super users that were tweaking things and updating the hours and updating location if it moves. And that worked really well when there were 50 million people using the app. And it turns out that still works pretty well when there's millions of people using the app. But we don't need tens of millions of people using it regularly in order to maintain that data set. Now we routinely do partnerships with third party sources, so that we take our crowdsourced map of the world and then we bring other people's data on top of it and other people's data on top of that, and helps us really clean and normalize things. And it just turns out that it's a really amazing data set. And then on top of that, we used all that data to make this amazing technology, which originally used to be called the Pilgrim SDK. Now it's called the Movement SDK. And this is like a little piece of software, like an engine that you can, you know, put on your iPhone or Android device. And it makes your device, you know, kind of conscious of where it is, right? Am I moving? Am I stopped? Okay, I'm stopped. Am I in a coffee shop? Oh, I'm in a coffee shop called Starbucks. Have I ever been here before? I've been here lots of times. Am I familiar with this neighborhood? I know this neighborhood really well, right? So just giving that kind of essence of contextual awareness to different apps is a superpower. And you can build really cool next generation services on top of that. And so that's like a really amazing developer tool that, you know, we give people access to. And then, you know, on top of that, there's this kind of this broad understanding the company has of like, well, how are the phones moving through the world? And are they going to Home Depots, or are they going to Chipotle's, or are they going to malls, or are they going to golf courses? And, you know, that's just like a like an extra layer of intelligence that the platform has. And we can turn that into different types of insights and analytic tools that are interesting to a number of the partners and customers of the company.
Foursquare dominated internet culture for a while, right? Like the idea of being a mayor of like a Foursquare place. Like I had my first tech story that I got published, or one of my first ones, was about this plugin called Couch Cache that, you know, made you seem you remember that? It made you seem like you had a cool life by like you picked like a different type of night that you wanted to have, an artsy night or a, like, you know, a binge drinking night, and would like post your Foursquare check-ins through the night to your Twitter followers to show like you were actually having a good time. Like this was like a huge part of internet culture. And it also seems in some ways like that era of the, like it was a more fun era of the internet has passed.
Yeah.
And obviously like the user numbers, like you've said, we've moved from like maybe 50 to in the tens. It does seem like that peak has, we've moved beyond it. So you are front and center. I mean, what do you think caused that shift from that like more fun and more consumer oriented internet to whatever we have today?
That's a great question. Actually, it's a great discussion too. You know, I mean, there was a period, call it, you know, 2009, 2010, when we started, and a lot of these other things got started where you're really just making apps for your friends. And that is super fun. And it's like, may the most fun app survive, right? Like that's how it worked. And you know, as things are starting to grow, you start to get into this race where it's like, okay, all right, you know, Facebook was the biggest thing, and then it was Twitter. And then it's like, well, Instagram's growing and Snapchat's growing. Okay, how are we going to monetize these things? Well, it's going to be advertising. All right. Well, if it's going to be advertising, we got to get as many users as possible. Just get the numbers up regardless of what you're doing. And so, you know, then you take these products that are kind of niche and small, maybe a couple million users, and you start to, you know, make product changes that make it interesting and accessible and attractive to, you know, tens of millions of users. And in doing so, like, I think part of the original product loses some of its soul, right? Like an example of this from Foursquare is like, you know, we used to have this inherent bias built in that like independent coffee shops and independent restaurants always trump chains, right? But then, you know, a big chain of coffee shops or a big chain of like taco places. But then as you start to do these like advertising deals with them, it's like, well, you can't really talk trash about the big chains if they're the ones that are, you know, helping to pay the company's bills. And you kind of run into this weird thing. Well, what are we going to do from a search result perspective? It's the company's opinion that the local taqueria is always better than the big chain. Well, but the big chain is not happy about being, you know, like you run into those types of issues. And then you start to get into the weighting of feeds, the algorithmic feeds, right? And, you know, this is like a well-documented thing where I think a lot of people felt that social media started to feel less fun and less relevant and less personal when it was just you showing off what you were doing, all your friends responding to it. So like now you're seeing a bunch of strangers, and now you're seeing a bunch of brands, and now you're seeing a bunch of influencers, and it's all just kind of like performance art. And, you know, it's just like the structure and the incentive and the meaning and the why for a lot of the stuff has just changed over time. And then there's like a whole generation, I think, of like, you know, consumers or users of internet products, internet culture, that this is all that they know, right? Like they only know algorithmic feeds. They only know the For You feeds. And this idea of like software that's fun and playful, like it's just not their experience of the internet. Like social media makes you feel bad about yourself, and it's, you know, you're always watching your like count, right? And this, like, you describe the the period before that stuff was the norm to people, and it's totally foreign. Like, they don't remember that. They never participated in that. And, you know, that's kind of the period of the internet that I grew up in, right? Like, Flickr and Dodgeball and Delicious and Friendster and Foursquare and, you know, early Twitter, right? Before this stuff just got huge and turned into, like, a part of, like, the mass culture machine, these were toys, you know? Like, Chris Dixon has that great quote, like, the next big thing starts off looking like a toy. Like, we made the toys. There's a lot of us that made toys beginning on. And then those things grew up to be these big platforms that, like, you know, they just change over time. And anyway, so, like, when I think about building stuff again, I think about it less from, like, all right, how do we build the biggest thing possible? And more like, well, how do you make something just, like, super fun for people? How do you get people back to this point where, like, they're using something because they want to use it, not because it's designed to be addictive, you know, not because we're, you know, engineering dopamine hits into it, but just because, like, it's like a fun, enjoyable social experience.
Right. And that, like, brings me to a question, which is, can we change a variable today to get us back to the time where things were fun? Like, is there something that we can change? Is it obviously the pursuit of scale, I think, will always be baked in, but is it, like, a different form of venture capital? Because there's a push and pull here, right? Like, if we end up having, like, fun products that take off again, like, that's still going to be a good business. Maybe it's not, like, you know, massive Twitter business, but it's still something that's going to be worth something to people. So there's got to be, people want the internet to be fun. There's got to be a void. So I'm just curious if I'm curious if you think there's a way to get us back there. And if so, what do we change?
Well, I don't think it's like a variable, but, like, mm-hmm. you know, I feel like I'm old enough to have remembered a time where I'm like, Yahoo, what could ever be better than Yahoo? And then be like, Alta Vista, what could ever be better than Alta Vista, right? For search engines.
Right.
And then it's like, MySpace, who could ever be MySpace, right? Like, these things that seem like impossible to deconstruct, like, they eventually come tumbling down and then new stuff emerges in its place. And, you know, even rewind like 3 years ago, like, how the heck is Google going to come apart? And then you start to see, like, oh, maybe we're kind of done with search and we're just always using bots and we're always using LLMs, right? And so you can start to see, like, maybe there is a changing of the guard that's happening. It's not a variable that you flip or change, like, well, let's just do this instead of that. But it's just like, you know, maybe the incumbents, this is the part where, like, they can't move quick enough to keep up with new and emerging technologies, and they'll steadily be, up and coming companies, products, services that continue to challenge these things that just seemed like indestructible a couple of years ago.
But even if so technology shift might be one way to do it, but even if the technology shifts, like, you still end up with that pressure that you talked about to scale, right? Like, we're seeing even in the AI situation where you have these companies like OpenAI, which have, like, billions of dollars put into them, an $89 billion valuation, and those pressures to get big and do it in those ways that make things less fun will inherently come to them. And in fact, their mission of, like, developing AI responsibly, you know, sort of gets tested when they have all that money put into them. So just to put a finer point on it, do you think there's a way of funding tech companies, you know, that can help them retain some of that original character that we talked about, that just doesn't put these expectations to scale on them? Or is it just a fact of the internet economy that if you don't scale, you will shrink?
Yeah. Well, this is also a tricky question because, like, you know, there's a difference between building, like, hey, I'm going to build a consumer service and I'm going to, you know, try to do something on the internet in a new way. And I'm going to get a small team of engineers and maybe I raise a little bit of money or maybe we just bootstrap it, whatever. Like, that's one thing. And that's what a lot of us think of when we think about, like, oh, internet companies, internet startups. And then you've got this whole other thing where it's like, if you're doing, you know, a lot of this AI work and you need dedicated hardware and you need specific chipsets, like, you know, you need to raise a huge war chest in order to have access to the server farms that can do the stuff that you need to, right? There's all these arguments around, like, hey, it's going to be really hard to unseat companies like Google and OpenAI and Microsoft and Facebook, for example, Meta, just because they have all this infrastructure already. And it may be the case that, you know, he or she who has the best infrastructure is the one that ends up winning this round, right? And who knows? But like, you know, when you're talking about like fundraising in general, like, hey, to build something like Foursquare, like we built 15 years ago, it's a totally different model. You would need a smaller team. The tools are much better, cheaper, easier, right? You could probably do with 5 people what we were doing with 10 people back then, right? To build like a cutting edge, AI company, totally different ballgame, totally different model, totally different cost structure. So, you know, I think venture is always, venture exists for a reason, to help those companies that need that capital to do those things get what they need in order to scale up, right? But then, you know, it's a totally different issue of like, hey, can you still do things, smaller things on the side? And can those still be relevant, big? Can they still scale? I think that's the thing that still remains to be seen.
Yeah. And there's one more point about this, which I'm curious to get your take on, which is that, yeah, you have the VCs pushing for scale, but you also have big tech that's copying. And sort of, if you have a good idea and it takes some momentum as a standalone product, it's almost like a sure thing that, especially if you're a consumer, that a Facebook or a Google will eventually just copy that. And then it goes from, okay, we're scaling, we're gaining momentum, to all of a sudden, oh my goodness, like Mark Zuckerberg is going to cut off my growth. And then that sort of changes the nature of these things. For instance, you know, you talk about like checking in, like, didn't you guys have a situation where all of a sudden, like, Google starts to make reviews and check-ins part of Maps, and they just have a much bigger install base? So how big of a factor is big tech in terms of, you know, what's happened to the consumer internet?
Well, I think it's less about, I certainly remember the time where it's like, gosh, we're going to get cut off from the feeds, right? They'll throttle the feeds in such a way. And I think that's less of a growth thing now than it was. But like this idea of like, hey, can a bigger company be inspired by the work that a smaller startup does and just say, hey, I want this to be in my app, and therefore I will make your app less relevant or less special. You know, probably the most well-known version of this is, Instagram reaching into Snapchat and taking the stories format and saying like, well, this is a brand new format. We would like this format in our app. Like, does that undercut their growth? Does it commoditize the category and the products a little bit? Like that, you know, it happens all the time. I think that type of stuff happens all the time. It's probably like the most well-known or maybe like surgical, perfectly executed version of that. But yeah, I mean, like how many breakout apps do you see these days? Maybe it's like one or two a year, really, right? I mean, I'm not as into the scene as I was before, but it used to be like, hey, there's a new thing to play with every month.
Every month, right.
And there still is new stuff to play with every day, every month. But like, how much of the stuff really has sticking power? And if something really does get sticking power, does the thing that make it interesting and novel just get sucked into some other product in a way that, like, you know, hinders it or makes it less special? Like, I think, you know, that's still a real thing. That said, like, you know, it's not stopping people that I know from continuing to build things. Like, people aren't like, oh, shucks, it's not even worth doing a startup because Facebook's right. just going to
well,
copy it.
Hear.
Like, yeah, no, people are, you know, like there's a certain class of people that are just like, you know, I like to build things. I have an idea. I cannot sleep at night until I see this thing exist. I will go make this thing. That is the thing that makes me happy, is building this thing. And, you know, I think that's how new stuff gets pushed in the world, is people just brute force through all of these, you know, hypothetical reasons not to do it.
Last question about this. There was a meme that went around a couple of weeks ago about how, like, basically consumer VC is done for. What do you think about that?
I don't think it's done for. Like, I mean, I see deals all the time. People are always pitching me stuff. People are still fundraising. There's still funds that do this. You know, people going out raising $50 million to build a consumer app that doesn't have, like, runaway traction. Yeah, sure. Those days are long gone. Does that mean that there will never be another hit consumer app? Like, absolutely not. Are people much more wary to take a bet on one? Yeah, absolutely so. But, you know, it's just people being more selective. There's probably a lot less money to go around, and people are much more cautious about where they place their bets, but I don't think it's totally gone.
Right. Okay, let's talk about a bet that you're making, and let's just go full circle here, because couple of weeks ago, you threaded. I love your Threads feed, by the way. It's great.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. No, it's real fun. I feel like, are you more active there than you were on Twitter?
I'm done with Twitter. I gave up on it a couple months ago.
Yeah, so I do enjoy the stuff that you put out there. Great video of, we all talk about it, of Steve Jobs calling virtual reality like headphones for video. But more to the point, you said, I'm working on a new project. It's an app. I'm walking around NYC today testing it. And one of those, and it's one of the things that just pushed me, made me LOL. That is a great feeling as a builder. That is all. And then you gave like the Threads hashtag, make the internet fun again. So, you know, we spent like 20 minutes or talking about how could the internet be fun? Do people want to build consumer apps? How do you scale them? You have like, by nature of what you're building, an answer here. So actually, for listeners, I have no idea what Dennis is building. And I think you're going to talk about it in public for either the first time or one of the first times now. But what I've heard is that you might have gotten like a band of like the old Foursquare folks back together and are trying to build something not exactly the same, but in that nature. So well, how do those rumors compare to reality, and what's going on?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, like I like to build things, right? Like since leaving Foursquare, I've tried to do less building and more like, you know, like more company building than product building and advising, right? Because that's kind of what I was doing for a while. But like I do like to build stuff. And, you know, my last gig at Foursquare was running the R&D labs there. Like just, you know, the mandate was take the tools and technology, take all the stuff we've made at Foursquare over the years and like make cool stuff with it, like build cool things. And we had made, like my favorite thing at Foursquare I think we ever made was this project called Marsbot for AirPods. And it was like a city guide for AirPods. And you would just walk around, it would tell you stuff about the city. And, you know, like we were working on it in 2019. I wrote a big blog post about it. We were set to launch it at South by Southwest in 2020 and then COVID, right? And that's like, well, that, I mean, no one's walking around, no one's doing anything. That project just kind of went back on the shelf. And then, you know, I ended up leaving the company like a year later. And I think the project has been turned off and the app has been removed from the store. And, you know, that's like the, I love that product. And so, you know, like one of the things I'm working on now is like a sequel to that, basically. It's like, okay, like this, you put your AirPods in, you walk around, it tells you interesting things that are happening about the city, right? That old project that we had, I mean, this is back in 2019, you know, we had whatever, you know, a couple thousand users of it. And, you know, we were starting to get interesting feedback. It didn't reach any scale, right? But like there was enough there to be like, there's something really interesting here. And that's what we're trying to do with this new version. The thing that we have now, yes, there's like it's like we're in the stage where it's not a company, it's not a product, it's a project, right? It's a project I'm working on with a couple folks that worked at Foursquare many, many moons ago also. And it's called, right now it's called Bebot, which is like what my son used to, instead of saying robot, he would say Bebot. And so it's like, you know, it has like a robot voice that talks to you. But I know before we jumped on the pod, I was in the Lower East Side of New York, and you know I walked all the way over here. It took me about a half an hour, and as I'm walking through the Lower East Side in Soho and the West Village, it's popping up and it's telling me about like, oh, this place is interesting, and this place is new, and this is why this is something that's cool going on here. And so you know, it's really an exploration of use like an audio first experience that's built around cities. And so sometimes I think of it almost like a version of Waze, but for people that walk around, right? Like what's happening around me? What should I know about? What should I not know about? What should I stay away from? What should I flock towards? And so like these are the things, like I love this space, like this idea of like you build things for your friends in cities that help them have a better experience in the cities, but are also just kind of like a little bit fun and a little bit weird. And so, you know, we have like 50 people testing it now. Most of them are in New York. Like the feedback is like, it kind of works, but it kind of doesn't. This thing's kind of funny. This thing's really annoying. This thing didn't work. Here's an unexpected bug. So we're in that point where like, we're at that stage where it's like, we're just trying to tune it so it works better. And then you can start to layer like the fun and whimsical and weird stuff on top of it. And I feel like that's kind of like my bread and butter. That's the stuff that I love to do.
Yeah. So hearing you talk about it, it's not like an audio tour. It's like, not like a, yeah, this yeah. is a history.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I should have clarified that. Like it's, you know, I always thought of like, audio as like poor man's augmented reality, right? Everyone wants to wear the glasses
and see the
post-it notes, the virtual post-it notes. Like, I've seen the glasses, I've tried the glasses. Those glasses aren't happening anytime soon. But if you want to play in that space, like, okay, let's just play with audio. Like, I'm wearing these things now. I've been wearing them for the last like 2 hours. Like this works. And like, you know, we were able to tune this enough where it's like you can be on a corner and it's like, yo, look up. And you're like, you look up and it's like, let me tell you about the thing you're looking at. There's no camera in it. You can just do that with the compass, the accelerometer, with motion, with GPS, right? Like we're building, the thing that we're building, it's built on top of the Foursquare API and the SDK, the movement, the Pilgrim SDK, which is now called the Movement SDK. Like it's like the same X stack, and it's like the same vibe. It's just like, you know, in a different state now. But yeah, this is the stuff I kind of love building.
Yeah, it sounds great. So it will point out, like, if I'm getting it right, historic places, but also like cool buildings, interesting architecture, maybe event spaces or restaurants.
A little bit of anything. Like I think of it as like a platform for contextual aware notifications.
Cool.
Right. Like, you know, when people say notifications, you think of like, oh, I get push messages on my phone with like the headlines from the New York Times, right? It's like, yeah, like that, I feel like there's so much stuff on your phone that's meant to distract you, that's meant to like command your attention. You know, like I get a notification, it's like, whoa, why don't you disappear into the phone for a couple minutes instead of being in the real world? And what I want to do is kind of build a notifications platform that is respectful of your attention. Like, we're not here to distract you. We're not here to pull you into the internet. We are here to augment your experience of the real world. And like, I feel like this is what we were trying to do with Foursquare in 2013. You know, before things like Instagram and Snap got so big and people just got lost in endlessly scrolling, you know, feeds and dopamine hits of likes and all. And it's like, I have this whole thesis about like, This internet that I wanted to exist, 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13, building Foursquare, building this tech, like that internet never happened. It's over here in bizarro world. And like the internet we got is the one that's like, you can just sit and scroll forever. The algorithm will keep giving you stuff. Spend more time looking at the glass. Spend more time in the feed, right? And remove yourself from the real world. And it's just like, I get it. That's big. There's a huge ad model behind it. People are making tons of money off that. It's just like, it's just never been the thing that I'm like passionate about. Like my whole career has been build software for the streets, right? Stuff that helps people pay attention to the real world. And like, I think what I'm trying to do now at this stage of my career is go back to that moment in time, like 2013, where I feel like Foursquare had a lot of the stuff right. We just weren't big enough to make the thing happen. And I want to go back to that and like build the things that like I think should have existed or that should exist in the world. And it starts with this thing, you know, this Bebop thing that we're working on now.
Yeah. And then so where does the information that it pulls from come from?
A lot of it comes from Foursquare right now. Like the content isn't great. This is something I gotta like, it's on my list of things to fix. I remember I was like sending some Slack messages before we jumped on the call. I was like, okay, we got a problem with content. I just took a long walk and the content's all screwed up and here's how to fix it. But it's a little bit of Foursquare stuff. It's a little bit of OpenAI, right? Hey, we found something interesting. Give a prompt to OpenAI, and then OpenAI is like, let me tell you something magical about this place. But like, you know, OpenAI has just got the wrong vibe. It's not that it does its job, but like, I don't like the job that it's doing. And then some of it is user generated, right? Just people are leaving content. And then some of it is being imported from third parties. Like you send a little bot out in the internet. It's like, tell me what, find the interesting things that are happening in this neighborhood and then bring them into our ecosystem so that we can relay them out to people.
So there could also be like events like, hey, there's, you know, just so you know, there's going to be an open air concert going on in this field on Thursday.
It can be anything.
Wow.
Yeah. It can be a little nugget of trivia. It could be like a daily affirmation. It could be pointing out a street artist. It could be pointing out like this, something's going to happen here in the future. Something happened here last night. Someone just walked by 5 minutes ago. And so really just like think of it as like a platform for delivering these types of like respectful notifications. In addition to building the platform, we're also, selling it with content at the moment.
Yeah. And so it's going to be audio format. Let's say I'm listening to a podcast. Will it kind of jump in and be like, hey, by the way, or would I have to have like no audio on otherwise?
Yeah. If you're listening to a podcast, it will pause it and then it will say its thing. And you know, the thing is meant to be like 10 syllables. Like it's short, okay. You know, it's not like, let me give you a 30-second monologue. It's like, here's one sentence, two sentences, we're done. I'm going to go back to your podcast. If you're listening to music, it will lower the volume a little bit. If you're on the phone or doing a video call, it won't interrupt you. It just kind of goes to sleep. But it's meant to be very light. Like you might go on a walk, you might hear nothing. You know, you might go on a walk, you might hear three things, right? But it's not meant to be overwhelming, right? Like it's important. Like I think it's important to kind of note, like I feel like the world is trying to get into this like agentic state, right? Where it's like there's software that is looking out and doing tasks for you on your behalf. But that like we don't live in that world. We live in a world where these things dominate all of our attention, right? And all of the things that we address by name, Siri and Google and Alexa, like they are, Siri's going off, right? Those are creatures that you rub the magic lamp, hey Siri, and Siri comes out. It's like, no, we're not doing that. We are doing the opposite. This is like an angel or devil that sits on your shoulder and it taps you. And it's like, hey, I know you're walking somewhere really fast. You're really busy. You got shit going on. But let me just tell you about something I think you're going to like, right? And so it's kind of flipping the agentic model around, right? I'm not asking the genie to come out of the lamp. Like, this is the thing that is like proactively giving me a little nugget of info that is supposed to make my day a little brighter or to make you smile, right? Like that thing, like I've been kind of under wraps about this, but like when I was walking down the street the other day and I passed a piece of content, it literally made me like laugh out loud. And I was like, we got it. This is the thing, right? It's a moment where you're like, okay, this is not this is a project, but this will be a product and it will be a good product because it can make you do that thing. Like it can make you feel that way, even when it's in this like really like basic, shitty, barely working state.
Yeah. All right. Two more questions for you about it. Then we can move on. First of all, we had talked about this before you basically released it to a handful of people. And then while you were testing it and you were very interested in getting some feedback from the testing. So what have you learned so far?
Yeah. I wanted to, we punted the date of the podcast because I wanted to like, I just wanted some confidence that like, mm-hmm. Does it work at scale? And 50 people is not scale, but like, okay, you put it on people's phones, they're walking around, they're hearing stuff, like they don't hate it, right? They give me feedback, it's like, it's fine, it's not great. I'm like, I can live with that feedback, but technically it works. It works well in some places, it works okay in other places. It's not crashing people's phones. It's not making people sick. It's not totally annoying people. You know, it's like, okay, we got a good thing here. And then also like, you know, the first is like, does it even work? Like, can we get it to work? And then the second thing is like, is it fun? Like, is it worth doing? Is it worth trying to do it at a larger scale? And, you know, yes, the feedback I've gotten from some people from folks are like, yeah, there's something here that like, you know, you do it right, it could be delightful, which is really kind of where, you know, my high bar for it. But then, you know, me walking down the street, having my own experience of like, okay, I get it. I had that moment. I have that confidence. But like, I think in that thread that you had mentioned, I should put that in the show notes because I think there's like little mini thing there.
Right.
But like I had mentioned like this idea of like founder self-doubt. Like I've built lots of stuff and people like seek my opinion out all the time for how to build stuff. But like, I am still like, I don't know. Can I still do this? Is this any good? Like, should I be doing this? Should I just go get another job, do something else? But you know, you have to, I think sometimes you have to have that moment where you're like, okay, it gave me the boost of confidence that like, this is the thing. This is what we do. Now we talk about it. Then we build it and we keep doing it. You know, it's kind of needed that shot in the arm.
We spoke for a good chunk of today also about the push to scale and how that can sort of make a fun product not fun. Let's say it does, you know, get to this point. Like, how are you going to avoid those pitfalls that we discussed?
I don't know. You know, like my job right now is like make a thing that works, make a thing that people like, make it feel delightful and fun, mm-hmm. And then figure out how to turn it into a business, right? Like, what do I want to do? Like an ad in data business again? No, I am not hungry to do that at all. Could I make it a subscription product? Absolutely. You know, could there be, you know, some sponsored content in there, right? Where, you know, people are, you know, brands are creating content and scattering them around. Like, it's kind of like the stuff we did in early Foursquare. Sure. Right. Do I have to raise $100 million to build this thing? No. Can I make it work with a smaller team and kind of like a scrappier business model and maybe like some subscription and sponsorship revenue up front? Maybe, possibly. Right. So let's just try that. And then, of course, I mean, like, I'm drinking, like, the Web3 Kool-Aid a little bit. I don't want to say, like, NFTs and crypto, but this idea that, like, you know, hey, there's opportunity for people to own their content. There's opportunity for people to monetize on those platforms. Like, I'm hopeful about that stage of the internet. And, you know, I want to build not just this. I mean, I have a couple things I want to build. That I hope will have the opportunity to participate in that ecosystem when, you know, my own products are mature and that ecosystem is mature.
Okay. And is there a link if you give me a link, I'll link it in the show notes, but is there like a URL people can go to sign up to a wait list?
No.
Oh, okay.
there's a URL, but it's like, you know, Google form, blah, blah, blah. So I will give you the link, but it's not like go to this website.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's a good idea, though. I should do that.
All right. Well, if you give us a link and you want people on the wait list, we will link it. All right.
Yeah, let's take. I will. I write the show. I'll do this, and you can put it in the show notes. So.
Okay. Sweet. All right. Well, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll talk a little bit more about this Web3 thing because we have differing opinions on that, and we should tease that out. And then also maybe a little AI and VR, and then we'll head out. All right. Back right after this with Dennis Crowley.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. In the last 100 years, we've seen financial markets swing, new currencies come and go, decades of savings lost in days, all showing that a retirement plan without a guarantee, quite simply, isn't enough. So more than a retirement plan, TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life, a promise that pays off. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
From LinkedIn News, I'm Jesse Hempel, host of the Hello Monday podcast. In my 20s, I knew what career success looked like. In midlife, it's not that simple. Work is changing, we're changing, and there's no guidebook for how to make sense of it. So come figure it out with me on the Hello Monday podcast. I've been a journalist for 2 decades, writing cover stories for Business Week, Fortune, and Wired. And now, every Monday, I bring you conversations with people who are thinking deeply about work and where it fits into our lives, like Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella on growth mindsets.
The learn-it-all does better than the know-it-all.
Or NYU professor Scott Galloway on choosing a career.
I think the worst advice you can give a kid is follow your passion.
Or MacArthur Genius winner Angela Duckworth on talent versus grit.
Your long-term effort and your long-term commitment are surprisingly important.
Each episode delivers pragmatic advice for right now. Listen to Hello Monday with me, Jesse Hempel, on the LinkedIn Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back here on Big Technology Podcast with Dennis Crowley. He's the co-founder and former CEO of Foursquare, founder of BeeBot. You heard it here first. All right, so let's talk about Web3. The thing about Web3 that always, outside of all the scam coins and all that stuff, Aaron Levy was here a couple of years ago talking about Web3. We did a Web3 episode, and his main criticism was that if you build for people with a financial stake in something, you're also gonna build something different than people who just want to use it as a user, and it's very difficult to build for those two different stakeholders in a way that's coherent. So you mentioned, in the first half, you were drinking the Web3 Kool-Aid. You're a builder of products, consumer products. So how do you manage that tension?
Yeah, I don't know, right? Because I've never built something in this space before. And I should know, like, I don't fashion myself like a Web3 innovator. You know, like, I don't expect to be the one that's inventing stuff in the space. I like to sit back and watch what other people are doing and then be like, hey, is that something that would be applicable to what we're doing? Maybe, right? Maybe in a year from now or 2 years from now or something. You know, I've worked on a bunch of projects over the last couple of years, and you know, some of them are like Web3 adjacent, but like I never found like the real, like it never worked. It never worked in a way that wasn't forced. Right. And that's not to say that it can't work. It's just to say, like, it doesn't work right now. Right. And so I'm kind of like, I'm hopeful and like, I'm optimistic about like what people position as like the next phase of the internet. And then like, you know, I think I'm still wrapping my head around all the nuances of it. But, you know, I'm more like a Web3 curious in a sense of like,
yeah,
I see what's going on here. I appreciate the people that are building. I certainly recognize all the nonsense and scams that have happened. And I don't want to put all my chips in that pile, but like I kind of cautiously look at that as like, that's a space I'd like to play in, like when and if that's mature enough to play in.
Another thing that you talked about was that OpenAI had, let's just shift to AI. I think that like we could probably debate
yeah.
Web3, but it is interesting to hear your perspective on it. But on the AI front, you said OpenAI's vibe wasn't exactly what you were looking for. Now, maybe for that particular product, but what do you think about what can be built on top of these things and why wasn't that vibe right for you?
Well, when I say the vibe wasn't right, I mean like the prompts, right?
Right.
Like we're doing some basic prompt engineering and you know, I'm really like I the products I've built in the past have a lot of personality built into them. Right. Foursquare was very snarky, Dodgeball had a real opinion about the world. And so I'm trying to like have OpenAI, I'm trying to define a personality so OpenAI can give me content that I feel like is like on brand for this thing that we're making. I just haven't successfully done it yet. And so I don't mean OpenAI's vibe as a company.
Right. Okay.
I mean like my prompt engineering is crappy and I'm just kind of like, I don't want to do any more prompt engineering. I'd rather spend my time doing other stuff.
Right.
You know, that said, like, you know, it's pretty clear, like this set of tools that exist are pretty freaking powerful. And it's like, it really does foreshadow, I think, what the next stage of the internet is gonna be. You know, I posted something in Threads, like, I don't know, a week ago about how like Siri is almost an advertisement for how bad all of this stuff was or how hopeless it all was before LLMs existed. Right. If you try to use Siri now, like after you've been using like ChatGPT all day, you're like, this is a baby's toy, you know? But it's like, I mean, you really want, like, I want the Siri that's connected to the thing that's really intelligent. You know what I just got? Gosh, I didn't know why I'd talk about this. There's a toy called Curio that they're selling, like, you can buy it. And it's a child, like, a children's plush toy that has, like, a little device in it. And the device is like a local LLM, right? It's connected to the network. I don't know if it's local or not.
Really?
But like, you know, the kids can talk to it. Hey, how's your day? And things like, my day was great. How was yours? Oh, it's great. Can you tell me about electricity? Sure I can. You know, and like I have this toy. I haven't given it to my kids yet. I took it out of the package. I set it up and I was testing it. And I was like, man, this is like the future of toys. Why would you not want a toy that you can talk to? It's like straight out of Toy Story, right? But just like that, just, you know, occasionally you're playing with this stuff and you get a glimpse of like what the future is going to be. And you're like, that's kind of pretty cool. But then of course you get the glimpse of like, the future is awful with like deep fakes and ChatGPT lying to you and just making shit up, right? Like, you know, the future is full of disaster and peril also. But I mean, it's hard to look at a lot of these tools and not be kind of inspired for where this stuff is going.
Do you? So you said you have lots of
people. I don't even know if I answered your question.
No, that was a good answer.
What were you saying?
And you said you had a lot of people that bring you deals and you've seen lots of consumer products. We're always like looking for like what type of products can exist with this stuff outside of like the ChatGPT big models. Are you seeing anything that's catching your attention outside of this toy?
I see a lot of like consumer stuff. I see a lot of city guides. Like I see every city guide product that's out there. People bring it to me, and like I just know the space really well. I'm a little bit like jaded on the space. Like I see a lot of things that are very interesting, but like it's really hard to get like a breakout app in that space. I definitely have seen people experimenting with like chatbots and LLM stuff with city guides, right? Which I think is also interesting, but kind of hard to do. I'm most interested in like folks that are kind of like reinventing a category. You know, like when we talked about the BBot stuff, and this might just be my own bias, but like I feel like we're doing this, we're kind of in the space where it's like, I'm not making something that looks like something else. We're making something totally random, right? And in that way, it's like, it's weird and people don't really get it. And some people kind of think it's kind of stupid. And that's great. That's like the space I like to operate in. I had stuff where I've just been like, this is so good. Take my money. Right. I haven't really? Seen anything like that recently.
You haven't seen
not,
that yet.
Well, I mean, I'm not seeing that. So there's tons of deals out there that I don't see, right?
Right, right.
But
that's a good data point.
I do.
Though.
I see. Yeah. I see a lot of consumer stuff, and I have a full empathy for how hard it is to have like a breakout hit in that space. It's really hard to do, any meaningful user acquisition.
So last question about the AI stuff. We just had Gruber on for a very long episode talking about like Apple and their pursuit of AI was a very interesting part of that conversation. And I'm curious, like, so you brought up Siri and how bad it is. Let's say you put your like product hat on for Apple, like what could they do with this stuff? Because they are going to do something. Apparently it's coming at WWDC.
Yeah, I'm sure it's just like a much more conversational version of Siri. You know, like my experience with Siri is it just doesn't work a lot of times. And it can't hold a conversation. It loses the connection with the conversation. You know, it's just not great. And I think what we've seen is like the beginning of what great looks like. That toy I was talking about for my kids, I was like, this is pretty cool, right? I'm conversing with a thing that's not alive, right?
Yeah.
In a way that is far superior than Alexa and, you know, Google Home and Siri.
Wait, what's this toy
that's
called?
Cool.
Curio?
Curio. Yeah, I think it's what's the website? HeyCurio.com?
I got to get one of these.
It's rad. Yeah. A buddy of mine showed me their Instagram and I went and ordered one.
Cool.
Let's see. Where's
HeyCurio.com?
Oh, no, I just lost your window when I did that. Oh, here you are.
Yeah, Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, so that's what I would hope it would be, you know, just like a version of Siri that works as well as ChatGPT does, but just can access all the stuff on my phone.
Okay, last question for you. And we mentioned in the first half, you put this video up on your feed of Steve Jobs talking about how basically headphones are amazing because it's like having a speaker there with you at all times, but we don't have, what do you call it? Headphones for video, where you could put on headphones and all of a sudden and watch a video. And that's obviously what Apple has just created. Do you see this as something that really can develop into what they hope or not?
I think everyone wants the Vision Pro to be the augmented reality hardware of the future. You see all these people wearing it outside as if it's
you
like
you have seen
AR
people
glasses.
Outside with it, huh? That's becoming.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen. I've seen it on Instagram.
The videos.
And I'm just like, yeah. I'm like, look at these
funny.
People.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that, you know, I think people want that, right? They want that future to exist. They want this to be the product. Like my, you know, the data point that I have on it is like, this is like, it's a really nice big screen that you wear on your face. You're watching, you know, Star Wars on your couch is the best screen. Holy cow, it's in 3D too. You know, like you're working on your computer. Well, I have 50 monitors in front of me. I can do anything I want. I saw something someone had suggested, like, hey, even if you look at the way it's priced, it's like a mid-tier, you know, really fancy screen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I believe that's probably what it's going to be for the, you know, for the short term until it either gets smaller or lighter or cheaper or like really amazing games emerge for it.
Did you buy one?
But yeah, no.
Okay.
I
feel like you would be someone who would buy one.
I think there was a younger version of myself that was like really into it. But I also like, you know, I have two Oculus Quests, right? One for me, right. One for my wife. And it's like, I was an aspirational user. I'm like, we're going to use this all the time. We're going to go on date nights and VR during COVID, right? And we just, I mean, I got three kids, right? Like I just don't, it's just not part of like our, our household and our lifestyle at the moment. Although Thanks, I can Crowley. Tell you the moment, hold on, yeah. the moment my I was charging my Oculus once and yeah. my son, I think he was like 4 at the time, and he came into the room and he saw it charging and he picked it up and he's like, "Dad, what is this? It's a TV you put on your face." And he was just like, how have you been keeping this from me?
Oh my God.
And I was like, yeah. So it is going to be wild to see what they are into.
All right, Dennis, this is great. Thank you so much for joining.
Yeah, this is super fun. Thank you for having me on the show. And I'll come back in the future. We'll talk about Bebot and all the other stuff that it does and can do. So
that would be great. Hopefully I can get a chance to test it. So walking around New York will be cool. All right, man. Thanks
all
again.
Dude, I'll see you in a bit.
Great seeing you. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll be back on Friday with a new show, Breaking Down the News. We'll see you next time on Big Technology Podcast.